Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Abuelita, my father, my whole family, and Grand Canyon University made me the man I am today.
Hi, tia.
Hola.
I think I'm going to do Grand Canyon University's online program and get my master's degree.
Trata de llevar a tu familia en el corazón y lograrás lo que tú quieres. Estoy muy orgullosa de ti.
I have an announcement to make, so... I'm going to get my master's degree online at Grand Canyon University.
Find your purpose at GCU.
It's the bluest room in town. Yeah, they're actually funny. And the guests the sound through the ups and the downs. Yeah, they'll be there waiting for the next time round.
It is the weekly show here on the Blue Room. Hope everybody's doing well. Looking forward to the end of the international break and the Toffees being back on Monday. It's an utterly grim day here in Liverpool today. One of those days that makes James Rodriguez, I imagine, all the more pleased that he stayed at Everton for the time being, at least. But we'll come on to talk about him in a minute. First of all, our guest, Sarah Halpin, joins us. Sarah, how are you?
Yeah, not bad, thank you, mate. Like you said, other than the weather, it's a bit of a madness at the moment. But, yeah.
Shocking. Looking forward to the test match tomorrow at Old Trafford anyway. That should be an interesting one. Les joins us as well, as you can see, having a sip on his mate there. How you doing, mate?
I'm all right, mate. I've actually got a word for you. So, do you know the way the rain is just like just throwing itself down from nowhere? Known as a thunderplump.
A thunderplump?
Yeah, it's a 19th century word from Scotland and Northern Ireland to describe a heavy thundery shower that seems to come from nowhere and soaks you in seconds. There you go.
We just got the show right there.
Bam. Education.
Yeah, certainly got the show title anyway. It feels like it's a word that could be related to Everton quite a lot of the time, doesn't it? And also joining us as well, probably the man who started off this South American trend and South American influence on the Blue Room is Alan Fahili, who joins us from Brazil. How are you doing, mate?
Yeah, all good. It's definitely a bit hotter here. It's definitely a bit hotter here than it is in the L4, I think. But I got like mild sunstroke at the beginning of the week, like so. I wouldn't mind a bit of cloud at the moment, you know. But yeah, all's good here anyway. Looking forward to talking about the toppies for the next hour or so.
Absolutely, yeah. We will be speaking about what's been going on during the international break, and primarily Rodriguez, as I mentioned, back in training today. He's got off his yacht in Ibiza. And he's back with the Blues. He's working hard. Hopefully, he'll be involved on Monday night against Burnley. Of course, we'll look forward to that game as well. But a couple of things to start off with. We'll get the disappointment out the way first. Sarah, I'll come to you on this one, unfortunately. The Gales at the weekend, so much excitement going into a new season. Obviously, everyone was at Goodison Park, willing them on to do really well. Really interesting game against Manchester City. And, you know, there's no point dressing it up as anything other than it was. It was a bit of a disaster start to the season for them, wasn't it? I mean, speaking to the Gales this week and you know, knowing them as you do, what in particular do they think went wrong on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, it is so disappointing. I think the fact it was at Goodison Park as well, as you said, and we've sort of hyped it up, trying to get people to come down and support the girls, and really happy with the turnout as well. And the fans were absolutely fantastic, as expected. But yeah, massively disappointing, obviously, to lose 4-0. I think City scored 3 goals in 12 minutes. And I'd say for those first 3 goals, it's fair to say it's disappointing in terms of the way that we were dispossessed. Probably quite cheap goals to give away. And going 3 at the back, I think City just absolutely utilised on that. And you saw they were attacking us down our right-hand side, large parts of that first half. And we just couldn't get ourselves back in the game. And I think when the manager changed it in the second half, changed the formation a bit and made a few substitutions, second half we looked a lot better again. You know, there were times in the first half where we could have taken the lead and then it all just kind of fell apart. So bitterly, bitterly disappointed. And we haven't got it any easier. We've got Chelsea up next away this weekend. But the girls are gutted. You know, I think they're gutted for the fans as well that came out and stuff. But, you know, it's one game. There's a long way in the season to go. And I think it took us all a little bit by surprise. They're all a little bit shell-shocked by it. Didn't see that coming. Genuinely thought we had a good chance of beating them. So I think we can expect to see a response, definitely.
Was it just one of those sorts of things where, you know, there were a lot of things that could have gone wrong that ultimately did go wrong? Obviously, being back at Goodison Park for them again after a while, and the expectation, the change of system, as you mentioned. I think there's been 13 new players come in this summer. Is that right as well? You know, there's a lot of new faces there. And ultimately, they're playing an opponent who I imagine are expected to challenge for the title this season. Obviously, they got knocked out the Champions League last night, but have been in European contention for a while. Was it just one of those things where everything that could have gone wrong really did go wrong for them?
Yeah, I think so. I think, like you said, the system ultimately on the day, City managed to hone in on that, where our weak spots were, and they really capitalised on that, and they will be ruthless when they need to be. And I think, yeah, we just probably lost our heads a little bit, lost our way in the game a little bit when we conceded the goal so quickly. And then the occasion itself, you know, it's a great thing to play at Goodison Park, but maybe even that, the fact we've got so many new people bedding in as well, as you said, and you know, I've watched the girls pre-season, 5 out of 5 wins. Obviously, different level of opponent when you're playing Manchester City. But genuinely went into that with high expectations and thinking that we could cause an upset. So, yeah, it's a bit of a shock. And I think it is one of those days where, you know, we need to not dwell on it too much. I think take it in, look where we've gone wrong. But try not to dwell on it too much and bounce back, because the players that have come in as well, we've got winners in that squad, you know, real winners that have played at the top levels in different leagues across Europe and represented their countries and stuff. So hopefully, you know, we've lost one, let's not lose another, and let's hope that the girls bounce back strong.
Yeah, I suppose it's one of them. Les, I mean, I don't know how much of the game you saw at the weekend, but I suppose if you're integrating new players and you're trying to set up with a new system, then in a way, you sort of want to get those hard games out the way early on, don't you, when you're playing the better sides. And, you know, while the girls might have to take a bit of short-term pain in regards to the results and the quality of the opposition that they're taking, hopefully that the payoff will be the when they're playing, you know, easier teams and less talented teams later in the season, they're a bit more settled, they're a bit more acclimatised with each other, that they can really kick on then.
Yeah, I think it's the weird thing, isn't it? So I said playing the 5 or the 3 or the 5 at the back, however you want to say it. It automatically seems like, well, that will make you more solidly defensively, but it doesn't always work like that. I think I've said it before when the men's team have done it. It's a system that you've really got to work at, and everyone has got to be dead comfortable in what they do, else it can leave big holes all over the pitch. Although you've got more centre-backs in there, it doesn't always work defensively as well as it might do if it's a system that you're always using and you're dead used to. But yeah, I think it's, you know, a little bit depressingly, it looks like the women's game's going a little bit the same way as the men's game, is the fact that you're going to have these elite teams up the top all the time and they're going to be dishing out hiding sort of every now and then. It's just, you can't get too hysterical about an opening day result. It's, you know, mad things happen on the opening day. City might not stick 4 past another team. Everton might not concede 4 again. It's just one of those results. And as you say, if it's 3 goals in 12 minutes, it happens so often that, especially like sort of the really, really good teams, they can punish you and just put the game to bed quickly. So yeah, I think a lot of lessons will be learned from that, but it's one of them where you can't go too hysterical, because it's not the end of the world. It's, you know, it's a good hiding by a good team. It happens. Just move on to the next one. Sad that it is Chelsea, because they're another good team, as you said. But, you know, you've got to face these teams, as you said, Matt. If you've got players bedding in, get this out the way early doors and then crack on with the rest of the season.
Yeah, fingers crossed they can do that anyway. But yeah, like Les Ansara said, Chelsea away at the weekend is a bit of a nightmare fixture for them with that in mind. The other story I want to speak about before we start looking ahead and looking at training is obviously what's going on with Brazil and Brazil's plays at the moment. And I think I put on Twitter yesterday that I don't think it's any coincidence whatsoever that Evertonian Alava Healy rocks up in Brazil and all of a sudden the Toffees are getting preferential treatments from the Brazilian Football Federation. All the players are getting banned from all the top clubs who've not sent their players on international duty. But Richarlison is absolutely silent to keep playing. Alan, good to know that the Brazilian Football Federation, you've got their ear so soon on your move to Brazil already.
Yeah, I know. It's funny, to be fair. I mean, like, I'm enjoying seeing all the Liverpool fans getting quite angry at the fact that Richarlison to give him the pass when they're getting penalised and other clubs are getting penalised. But I think it's only fair. I mean, like, Everton took a risk by allowing Richarlison to go and play at the Olympics with Brazil. And obviously there's complex reasons behind their decision to do that, partly from a lack of power, you could say, in terms of their position with Richarlison, in that they wanted to keep him happy, keep him content, to kind of prevent him from forcing him to move away. But it's paid back now in dividends, you know. I mean, that's quite a complicated political situation, as you saw what happened on Sunday between Brazil and Argentina, when the Brazilian health officials came onto the pitch to basically deport two of the Argentine players who were on the pitch. But it's kind of a complicated week at the moment in Brazilian politics and Brazilian football, because like on Tuesday there was these massive demonstrations in favor of the incumbent president, Jair Bolsonaro, who's kind of a far-right president. And there was also manifestations against him as well, simultaneously. So there was nothing happened in the end. There was large demonstrations and stuff, but there was kind of a bit of tension beforehand that something could happen. Because, you know, there is different kind of quite extreme factions in both parties. So that happening on Tuesday with the match happening on Sunday, it just kind of spoke to this crazy week of Brazilian politics. And the Brazilian Football Federation, too, is kind of very much tied into Brazilian politics, evidenced by their decision to host the Copa America last summer, even though they didn't have the COVID safety, you could say, to do it. So their reasoning for that is purely political posturing, basically, trying to get back at the Premier League for not allowing the Premier League to release those players in the first place. But because Everton had done that with Richarlison for the Olympics, they realised that their relationship with him is good. And obviously we've Alan as well. And, you know, who knows, maybe somebody like Matheus Cunha could come in the near future too, given how stacked Atletico Madrid's frontline are at the moment. But yeah, it's definitely funny, to be fair. It's nice to see a bit of a good relationship between the Brazilian FA and Everton.
So what's the reaction to this whole thing been like over there? Because like you said, obviously the top clubs over here are kicking off about it, Liverpool in particular, because I think they're going to be without three players for the game against Leeds, which is more than anybody else. But I suppose this is more of a FIFA thing, isn't it, than a Brazilian Football Federation thing?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's mixed, because there's a lot of embarrassment here about what happened on Sunday, because the farce of it, like, it was just like next level. Do you know what I mean? Like, so the whole thing with the banning Premier League players is kind of flown by the wayside a bit, because the main focus has been on last Sunday's events and then also on Tuesday as well. So it's kind of not really made that much headway here, you could say. But I guess it's just pure vindictiveness, really, isn't it? Like, I mean, they're just kind of striking back because they weren't allowed to release the players, even though Argentina did, and then they just broke the rules and did it anyway. I don't know. It's got a very complex, intense situation, but yeah.
They were amazing scenes then, weren't they, Sarah, at the weekend in that Brazil-Argentina game? I mean, have you ever seen anything, probably haven't seen anything quite like that since Enner Valencia got chased around the pitch all those years ago by the officials in Ecuador?
That's it. I love a bit of madness, though, me. Though me, I'd have been right in there, in amongst the action. I'm trying to think of anything like that that's happened at Goodison Park. Maybe the most exciting thing in recent history was probably the black cat that got on the pitch in the Wolves game when we were 3-1 down.
I remember that fella coming on the pitch and handcuffing himself to the post. I think that was in the game against City. That your Darren Gibson game against City. He came on the pitch and handcuffed himself to the post. I don't know what he. I don't even know he was protesting. Yeah.
Scenes, absolute scenes.
Yeah, but it was mad, wasn't it? I mean, I'm sort of half expecting Les on Monday when Richarlison lines up for someone to come on the pitch at Goodison and say, no, lad, you're not allowed, off you come.
Yeah, I mean, this is going way too well for us. I've absolutely no doubt that by tomorrow night, it will have all been turned on its head and Liverpool will have their three players in and Richarlison will be banned. I've got no confidence that this will be seen through to the end. I don't know if it affects worse, though, looking at the Reds. I don't know if it affects them worse with those three players. Or Leeds losing Rafinha. That's a massive loss for them, isn't it?
I think Firmino's already injured, isn't he, as well? So,
yeah.
He wouldn't have been playing anyway. But it's a weird situation, though, isn't it? I mean, in all seriousness, it's something that has to be resolved going forward, doesn't it? Because there's going to be more international breaks. There's going to be changing situations around the world in regards to COVID. And it just feels like just better dialogue's needed between federations and with football clubs.
Yeah, it would sort of in a bit of a state of flux with it all at the minute, aren't we? Because, I mean, in the UK, it's not here anymore, apparently, or it seems that way. That's how it sort of feels. Everything's gone properly back to normal. So you're kind of looking for other countries having different experiences with it. Something needs to be done to give like a framework so everyone knows the score and everyone sort of adheres to certain rules. But yeah, I mean, logistically, it must be a nightmare for everyone involved. As I say, though, it is nice that Everton sort of come out smelling the roses for once. Very unusual.
Yeah, I'm reminded of the Irish thing where I think it was the instance over James McCarthy, remember, with Ronald Koeman and Roy Keane and Martin O'Neill. I think it's always going to be a thing where it's kind of almost personalities and just power clashes, because there's inevitable tension between players who belong to clubs and players who want to play for their countries. A lot of people were saying to me recently about the Brazilian players and how they want to, they'll be annoyed with the Brazilian FA for the way they've handled this, and they won't be as willing to kind of, you know, fight for the shirt when they return. But like, that's complete nonsense. Like for Brazilian players, for Argentinian players, their number one priority is their country. Make no doubt about it. Like Lionel Messi now isn't a PSG player. He's an Argentina player who's also playing for PSG. Like his priorities completely shift to Argentina. Do you know what I mean? That's just the nature of it is for those guys. Like, so I think when you're a club, you have to be mindful of that and not push your luck with players, whether it's, you know, with James McCarthy or with Richarlison or whoever, you know, because like for most of these players, and also the players you want really are the players who are wanting to, you know, really give it all for the country. Like, you know, so I think it's an inevitable situation, especially with so much money in the game, but it's something you have to manage kind of carefully, you know?
Yeah, I think McCarthy turned up for Ireland on crutches a few times, didn't he? Martin O'Neill, yeah. so intense on calling him up. But we'll stick with you, Alan. You know, you mentioned the Ireland setup there, and unfortunately, one of our players who went away with Ireland, who we're very reliant upon now, Seamus Coleman, has come back to Finch Farm injured just a couple of days after Everton failed to sign any kind of backup or any kind of competition for him. Looked like he played pretty well in both the games as well, but. You know, this is ultimately Everton suffering, you know, the consequences of their actions, isn't it?
Absolutely. He was very good against Portugal, to be fair. He was kind of properly giving it to Cristiano, a couple of different running battles with him as well, like, you know. And he's by far the most experienced, no senior Irish professional in the camp, like, without a doubt. He's the only one who's playing for, you know, I don't know, could we call ourselves the top Premier League club, but we're up there, you know.
Top off.
So, yeah, I mean, it's inevitable, though. I mean, like, when you don't plan properly, this is what happens. Like, Niels and Nkunku going off on loan, leaving us a one senior left back. We have one senior right back, really, because Jonjo Kenny, although he's a senior player, of course, like, he's not counted on by the club. If they could have got rid of him this summer, they would have, you know? So I don't know what the story is. I think we could be going back to the days of playing four centre-backs and a flat back four, to be honest with you. That seems to be the most likely situation from my perspective.
Yeah, I was speaking to Paddy in the week, Sarah, and he was sort of saying that aside from Luca Dean, now that the next left back at the football club is 15 years old. So certainly not well covered there. But just on Seamus, I mean, he's obviously had a great start to the season, and you know, you could talk about that and say how well he's played and how well he's sort of been leading the team in the early days of Rafael Benitez's tenure, but you just always get the sense of something like this is just around the corner with him, don't you? And I think it was reported earlier this week that the injury is not too serious and he might be in contention for Burnley. But, you know, it's just a bit of a warning, isn't it, of what potentially might come with Seamus, and potentially a bit of a warning that even if he's fit and available for every game this season, that we're going to have to manage his fitness and going to have to manage his minutes at times.
We are, and that, you know, it is a massive problem. Like Alan's just said, one senior left back and one senior right back is just not a way you want to go into the season. What, this is the fourth game of the league season so far, and we're likely going to, well, he could be fit, I don't know, but the chance, there's every chance that he's not going to play. So already we're seeing this. Of course, you know, he is towards the latter stages of his career. He is going to get niggles with injuries, and you've got to manage, as you said, his minutes and his injuries as well. This is not the one you wanted to see. I remember seeing it pop up on my timeline and just thinking, oh gosh. So like you said, are we going to end up seeing throughout the season? We've got Ben Godfrey, you could do left back, Mason Holgate at right back potentially. Yeah, so four centre-halves at the back. But yeah, certainly not the person you'd want to see injured. But again, this is what we were all worried about in this transfer window, that we didn't manage to get a right back over the line. We didn't manage to get a left back over the line. And we've seen a few of them go out as well. So it is a concern. And yeah, we'll just have to see what Rafa does with that now going forward.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because, like, you know, you can't really, I think in football, you can't buy potential too often. You can't be too clever in the transfer market because, like, Leeds and Kunkun, for instance, I mean, like, he needs game time to progress, but he's not going to get into the team ahead of Lucas Digne. But then who do you have as a backup left back? It doesn't make any sense. You know what I mean? Like, the best thing to do with fullbacks or any position really is what we did with Leighton Baines and Lucas Digne, bringing a top class left back who's going to eventually phase out the elder Lemon who've been holding the position for the last 10 years. That's what they should have done with Seamus Coleman. I know that's what they want to do and that's what they've been trying to, but it's not that easy because of, you know, a myriad of reasons, because of our financial situation, because of the lack of prestige we have at the moment, all that kind of thing. But like, if we brought in a right-footed Lucas Digne, he'd eventually phase out Seamus Coleman. Do you know what I mean? And then we'd be able to look at Seamus Coleman with the same affection we look at Leighton Baines. But because of Everton's ineptness in squad planning and squad building, they've let Seamus take the brunt of this abuse for not taking on a new right back. And they've had, like, I mean, they brought in Jibril Sidibe, he fought him off, no bother. You know, they brought in John Joe Kenny, he's not getting near him, you know? Like, it's not his fault that nobody better has come in. But a lot of Evertonians, it's almost like he's a scouser. You know, like Tom Davies gets, like, undue criticism and focus because he's kind of one of our own. So it's like you kind of wouldn't trust him in the same way you trust an expensive foreign import. It's the same thing with Seamus, you know? So I understand the need for a new right back. And I'd love a right footed Lucas Digne. But like, it's not his fault that nobody's come in. Do you know what I mean? Like, and it's kind of like, I'm disappointed with how the club has handled this, because Seamus is a modern icon, like, from my opinion, for Everton Football Club. Like, he's someone who embodies the football club in a way that we haven't seen since the likes of Leighton Baines or even Tim Cahill, you could say, you know, that kind of echelon of player, you know? So it's just disappointing for me the way it's been handled, to be honest. Like,
funny you should mention Tom Davis, because as I've put out there a lot, he is the right back in waiting for me. I think he can play that position. I think that's where we should put him. I think the Everton team is better with Tom Davis in it. Got to play right back. Get him in at right back.
I'm not sure at this point if this is an ongoing joke now or an actual serious crusade.
I have been completely serious about this from day one. I think he's played there before, hasn't he? I think when he first broke into the team, he had to go at right back. Honestly, for me, he's got everything you need to be a good right back. And I think if you play him in the middle of midfield, it's a position that can overwhelm a player who's not brilliant at one thing, which he isn't, but he's decent at quite a few things. Stick him at right back. It's an overrated position for me. Any fool can play right back. I played left back. Anyone can do it. It's dead easy. Just on the left back issue as well, I think the club have been really, really unlucky at what happened with Thierry Small, because he would naturally have been next in line. And if he'd not been so impatient to sort of go away and get first team football, whether he will at Southampton, who knows? But if he waited, you know, he could have got game time this season. He could have got first team football. It's just unlucky that a 16-year-old player's got that much of an inflated opinion of themselves. He might be that good, I don't know. But it seems to have a massive, massive opinion of yourself to want first team football at 16, being a left back. You've got the France international left back ahead of you. I think the club were unlucky. But TD26 right back.
Has anyone got the number 2 shirt? Maybe you can give it to Davis. Could be the start of it.
I'd have to Morgan Schneiderlin, to be honest.
Oh. Did Holgate have it 2 seasons ago and then switched to number 4?
I think Holgate's had it. I don't think anyone's got the Kenny got it, maybe? I don't know.
Let us know.
None of us really squad number nerds, are we? I don't think. But yeah, it's just, I sort of feel like maybe this season we're not going to see fullbacks bombing on around the outside of wingers that much. So maybe that's why they've just sort of thought we can just plug a centre-back in there. But, you know, in the same breath, if you're playing Ben Godfrey or Mason Holgate at right-back for a sustained spell, then that's one less player you've got to cover at centre-back, or one less player to cover at left-back in the case of Ben Godfrey. So it does leave your eyes all over the pitch, and maybe that's why people like Jared Branthwaite have stayed here as well. But
there's one you're forgetting. One pair. Yeah. One man. Fabian Delph. This is his time to shine. This is what he's here for all along.
Delph at left back, Davis at right back. Come on.
He played left back in the team that got the record. Premier League. He played left back in the team with the record Premier League points total, didn't he? So, you know.
Guardiola left back, but that's not a left back. That's like a left wing forward in other teams, isn't it? Like,
yeah, just I just cringed that we'll watch that City documentary when he signed. I thought we need a bit of that in our dressing room, and yeah, yeah. Less said about that, the better. Let's have a chat about some other things. Les, how much do you guys are still here? He was on the training pictures today. Lovely little shot of him sort of not quite in focus while Salomon Rondon and his immaculate Barnett was in focus in the background. But he is still here. He's not gone to Turkey or Portugal or any of the other nations where the window was still open. He's had a nice holiday, like I said, in Ibiza on his yacht. Look, he did a bit of vaping out there as well to sort of chill out. but he's here till January at least. I mean, Everton have got to find a way to use him, haven't they?
Oh, 100%. I'm made up. I think the idea of him going to the Turkish League did my head in, because it would be such a... I'm not going to say no disrespect to the Turkish League, because it's not going to be very good, is it? He's too good for that league. You know, even injury problems and fitness issues notwithstanding, he is too good for the Turkish League. And it would have been a horrible waste to see him leave Everton to go and play out there. So, yeah, I'm made up. I think, you know, there's reports that he didn't get him up beneath us at Real Madrid. There's, you know, we've been through all that. There's reports that he picks and chooses his games or whatever. That's all just conjecture. I think now he's here, he can be the difference in a lot of games. You know, you look ahead to Monday night. That's going to be a dog of a game. Make no mistake about it. Back at when we played them at Turf Moor last year, I think we drew 1-1. He set up what should have been the winning goal, but Sigurdsson put it wide. You know, he can do that. He can be the difference in games against the top sides, games against sides that are going to camp in like Burnley. And yet, you know, if Benitez doesn't like him, he's got to put this aside. I think he said to Paddy on the Subs Weekly, Benitez is a pragmatic manager. The problem is he's also a stubborn manager. I think he's got to use him. You know, he's here until January, at least, as you say, and he can be a very, very, very useful player. He's got to find a way to get him in the team. At least, you know, at least as a sub or something, he's got to be in there.
Surely, sir, it's in his interest as well, isn't it? Because there is a World Cup coming up in, you know, just over a year. He's going to want to be part of the Colombia squad for that. I haven't fallen out of favour with the new manager there recently. He is ultimately a footballer and he'll want to play football. So surely it's going to be in his interest. And I don't really think we've got any sense from what's been reported or anything from the club that this is a lad who's sort of completely cashed out and doesn't want to be here and is sort of throwing a strop in train. It seems like he's happy. It seems like he's ready to work. And, you know, if you just get off Twitch every now and then a little bit more, we might be able to see him on the pitch of it. But Everton, like I said to Les, Everton have got a wonderful world-class talent there, and it'd be a bit of a shame if he didn't tap into it, wouldn't it?
It'd be a massive shame. I think, you know, last season even, those moments of magic that he produces, you think the game at Anfield as well, that little ball through to Richarlison, the things that he just does, like Les says, he could be the difference. You think of a game against Burnley, if we're struggling, could he come on and pick that pass in the last minute or cut through the defence with something? It's James Rodriguez, and the thought of a team being better without having him there, to me, is just a bit obscene. And like Les said, I think seeing him go and play in Turkey when he's got the chance to play in the Premier League, it just doesn't seem right. I'm happy he's still here. And like you said, I think when Carlo left us, I think most of us kind of in our heads then made peace with the fact that that meant that would be the back of James Rodriguez. And actually, you know, he's not thrown his toys out the pram. He's not kicked and screamed and slagged the club off or anything like that. Even Yerry Mina's post the other week, my Panita's stay or whatever, and he's got him, Richarlison and James. And you just think, like, you know, he must be happy enough to be here. And as you said, it's a Premier League. He's at a good club. I know after Carlo leaving and stuff, we're not where we want to be. We want to get Everton back in Europe. But he's at a big club in the Premier League. And let's hope for however long he stays in now, whether it's till January or beyond, I'd imagine there's every chance it will be January. Let's utilise him and make the best of what we've got at the time we've got with him. And also for fans, you know, I'm made up that Evertonians now are going to get to see James Rodriguez play at Goodison Park and at Everton shirt, hopefully, because that would have just been the maddest thing. Carlo and James, no one there to see him hardly, and just gone. So no, I'm happy he stays and he's stayed. And as I said, I hope that we manage to see a little bit of him play, and that him and Rafa can put their differences aside for the good of football.
Yeah, I mean, we had 8 subs and 2 goalies in our last game from a possible 9. So to not have him in the squad would just seem a bit mad. Alan, first of all, can you give us a translation on my panitas, what that means?
It's just a Colombian thing, basically. Like, it's just like, you know, my little breads, like, basically. But to be honest, like, the Argentinian Colombian accent is just like, it's very different. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of the words they use can be different European Spanish. So like, a lot of it also is kind of like, same in Portuguese, Brazilian Portuguese, a lot of it's kind of derived from like indigenous lingo. Do you know what I mean? Like our African language and stuff like that. So it's a cool kind of mix of things and different elements to it, you know? But I think Les wanted to say something there.
Yeah, just on the, is he James or James? Because I remember you saying something about this.
Yeah.
This isn't actually.
I remember I was in a car before in Spain with like a load of fellas. We're driving to a football match or something. We're playing football, 5-a-side football. And we had the radio on basically. And then the radio were talking about Everton. It was just when James had just joined Everton. And they were talking about James and this. And they all started laughing. And I was like, what are you laughing at? Like, and it's so funny that all you English speakers, call him James when his name is James. And we're just pronouncing his name in Spanish. And you're just taking the pronunciation back. So like, his name is actually James Rodriguez, but like, we have basically copied his Spanish pronunciation. It's a bit like if everyone started calling Andre Gomez, Andre Gomes. Do you know what I mean? Like, because it's kind of the technically correct term, but like, it's not actually what it is. Do you know what I mean? Like, but just on James, I hope he can actually figure out who we're playing each week before he does come onto the pitch. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is a small aside, like, but no, seriously, I think that, like, I think, like, I've learned more and more as I got older and seen players, like, when Tim Cahill and Mikel Arteta left the club, part of my soul died. Like, that's when that was my Wayne Rooney moment, you could say. I was good when that happened. But, like, I learned after that basically what it is that there's not really any loyalty in football. What happens is you kind of priorities align at certain times. And at the moment, our priorities are aligned with James is. Because James is earning 200 grand a week, £200,000 a week, right? And like, I think it was 6 goals and 9 assists produced last season. Like, we need more than that for that kind of money. Do you know what I mean? Like, at the same time, now he's under no illusions that he cannot get a move to an elite of the elite club the way things are. He cannot get into the Colombian squad the way things are, right? So he's going to have a go. Okay, I'm nearly 30 years old now. Do I want to go to, I don't know, to play for Spanish club, for an Italian club, for a German club, for the next 2 or 3 years, playing the European Cup, and then go back to Colombia, go to MLS or whatever, make a nice mint? Or is he going to go, okay, I'm going to accelerate that process and take a step down now, go to Turkey, go to, I don't know, Qatar, and then go to the MLS after that? So I think if he decides the former, and he still has some competitive juices going, he's going to say, okay, one season here, I give it all. Play to a higher level. Sure, I still have what it takes. Get into the Colombian squad for 2022 and get a move then next summer if that's what you want, you know? That's the situation, like, you know? And I don't think Benitez has anything against him. To be honest, I don't think Benitez is a personal relationship with any footballer, genuinely. I think he's like this emotionless character, seriously. Like, so I would say his feelings personally towards James are more indifference. And he, Ham isn't the kind of player that he likes, that he doesn't contribute to the team the way someone like Salomon Rondon does, if that makes sense, do you know? But I think, as we said earlier, like, he's a complete pragmatist, so he'll figure out a way to use him in a way that benefits the team, if it does benefit the team. And James, being a guy who's desperate to get this last move or whatever, or that last strike of the kind of, you know, glory with Colombia, he's going to do that, you know? So we might have a very unpleasant to get there in the first place, but it's a very possibly beneficial little synergy between the club and the player and the manager, you know?
Yeah, it's just mad, isn't it? They're all sort of saying James Rodriguez could be an impact sub for Everton. You know, go back a couple of years and people wouldn't believe you. But just one other thing I wanted to ask you, Alan. Obviously, James was in a sort of similar situation in his last year at Real Madrid, where Zidane maybe didn't fancy him, or, you know, I don't know what the relationship was necessarily like, but he was a player that didn't fit in with the way in which he wanted to play, and he was marginalised, and he didn't play many games. Was there much sense at that point from sort of the Madrid media and Spanish media that this was a fella who was not really fussed in training, not pulling his weight, or was the indication that he was just sort of cracking on with business as usual, even though he wasn't playing?
No, I mean, like, you see, the thing to the Madrid media and the English media is, it couldn't be more different. Like, Real Madrid media and Everton media, you could say, couldn't be more different, because, like, the Real Madrid media, and I mean this in a slightly positive way, are probably the most arrogant media in world football. Absolutely arrogant, like, do you know what I mean? Like, and it's taken a hit in recent years because of the way things have gone. They've lost a few players, a lot kind of thing. You know, the financial might of the Qatari clubs and the Abu Dhabi clubs have kind of, you know, challenged their ability to get the best players. But, like, they just, like, if we look at James like he's some kind of god, you know, we're delighted to have him playing for us. Or even Carlo as well, the same thing. Like, they just look at these guys like, they look down on them, literally, like, you know, because, like, it was, even when Carlo was presented at Madrid, he was kind of saying, oh, the only thing that changes at Madrid are the coaches, the media stays the same. And they do stay the same. And now the Madrid media are properly entrenched in the community, in Spanish community, and in the club. They have very strong contacts within the club, you know. So for them, a player is only a passing thing. I mean, James came in after the 2014 World Cup. He had a very, very good season that first year and just didn't produce after that, you know. Like, they have a squad of something like, I think it's 30 players almost in the first team. Like, they're not going to waste time worrying about one player. Like, what I will say is that he was never given the Isco treatment, you could say, where Isco was, you know, turning up out of shape, you know, slightly overweight. His kind of excesses were more scrutinized. James never had that kind of obvious, you know, abdication of professional duty, you could say. But yeah, at the same time, he wasn't like Gareth Bale. Like, Gareth Bale was always mentioned as being in top physical condition, training like a dog, you know. It was never like that. But it also was never like the Isco thing. So I'd say they never really scrutinized him that much. He was never that relevant to them in many ways. But he definitely didn't down tools.
He looked in pretty good, Nick, on those photos on the boat, in fairness to him. So fingers crossed he's got some kind of fitness. But just to finish off, Sarah, to have a chat about Monday night. Goodison Park under the lights for the first time for fans. People listening to the podcast, Sarah is literally rubbing her hands together at the prospect of that. I mean, obviously, we've had the back of Goodison and that, you know, full Goodison in that game against Southampton, which everybody loved. You know, I saw your interview with Abdoulaye Doucouré speaking about that goal he scored and how much he enjoyed sort of embracing it with the fans as well. And I suppose throughout the season, we're going to have these little moments, aren't we, that we tick off. We're going to have the first Goodison game back under lights. We're going to have the first derby. Going to have to, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But this one feels like a big one, obviously, for fans to sense that atmosphere and feel it again. But for the team as well, you know, it's a great opportunity to go 10 points from the you know, first 12 available. And, you know, you look at Villa next and Norwich next. It's a great chance to get back into winning ways after the international break, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, like you said, Burnley at home, it's going to be a tough game. We know what Sean Dyche and Burnley can play like. They can be very, very defensive, and it might be one of those games that's not the easiest to watch. So I think the fact that it is Goodison Park under the lights, that should be enough to get the fans up and roaring. You know, it's the first time we'll have all been back inside Goodison on a night game for such a long time at full capacity. And as you said, the chance to get 10 points out of 12 is massive. And I think that helps fans already. And though I know it's only three games in, but to have won two and drawn in a difficult opponent at Leeds. I think, everyone's happy. It was very, very controversial, wasn't it, at first? Obviously, Rafa Benitez coming in was always going to be controversial. But if we keep winning these games and keep striving forward all the time, and the players that have come in have really shone as well, I think Townsend and obviously Damari Gray has just hit the ground running and then some. So we'll see what happens with Rondon as well, obviously reuniting. I think he's been back in training today. But I think, yeah, night game, Goodison Park, it's Burnley, so we're going to need the fans to like help the team through it, I think. We don't want it to get stagnant and keep them on that front foot. Let's go for it, attacking, and get the fans up and roaring for it. I can't wait to get back in there, to be honest. And like you said, the Corey's goal, the energy we all felt inside that stadium then. Let's have some more of that, man. Like, we need to get another win. It has to be another win and keep this momentum going. But yeah, buzzing for it. International break done. Get us back.
Yeah. Do you know what, Les? I'm really interested to see what the atmosphere is going to be like, because we've had that first big game and everyone was buzzing afterwards and stuff. And, there's a real sense of momentum being built in the second half of that. But we've had two away games and the international break. This one's going to be, it is under lights and that is exciting, but it's a Monday night. People are going to have been at work. It's starting, as we said, at the start of the show. It's going to be colder now. It's going to be, I'm not sure if it's going to be bouncing and everyone's going to be really up for it, or whether it'll be, a little bit flat and a little bit weird.
If any game has got the potential to be flat, it's Burnley at home, isn't it? Because that's what they bring to it. They want to make that game flat and sort of like, you've got to really dig in against them. I think the thing that go in our favour with this is the fact that, if Rodriguez is on the bench or if he starts, that immediately will give everyone a boost because we'll all be looking forward to it. So I think that'll generate a certain buzz around the game. I think this year, I think the way we played against them last year is a template in how not to play against Burnley. And I think Benitez will have looked at that and he will not want a repeat of that. I think the first half against Southampton, we saw that the team can slip into those habits where maybe they don't dictate the tempo. But what they did in the second half and what they've done in subsequent games is they dictated the tempo of the game. You've got the players who can be quick on the break, and that's all you need at home at Everton. If you've got an outlet, if we've got Townsend and Gray to bomb down the wing and act, or down the middle of the pitch to act as an outlet, got Richarlison, got Calvert-Lewin, and we use them properly, dictate the tempo, take the game to Burnley. That's all the crowd needs at Goodison. So even if it does fall flat, all it'll take is one break like that, quick break, and we'll be up again. So I think that's what Benitez has sort of tapped into straight away. He's sort of seen that that's what really triggers the Goodison crowd, that and a strong tackle, basically. So I think there'll be plenty of them against Burnley because they use this. So I think it's going to be very, very different to last season. And again, though, it's on the players to get the crowd up for it. It always is. I don't see it any other way. I think the players, they first and foremost dictate how the game goes, dictate the tempo, and then the crowd get on board and then they carry each other. But, I think we've got the players and the manager to do that this time.
Yeah, Les, if you really don't listen to Mailbag, Les will be about 10 on the Rafa graph, I think, at the moment.
I'm already about 12, I think, yeah.
Yeah. But just, Les mentioned tackles there, Alan, and one player who sort of springs to mind in regards to that, and I actually have quite vivid negative memories on from this game last season is Alan, who got absolutely skimmed by Dwight McNeil before he, popped that one in the top corner from about 30 yards. But you think about that version of Alan and the way in which this version has started this campaign, and they feel like two completely different players, don't they?
Yeah, totally, totally. I mean, I think it's like the human element is important too sometimes. I think when a player has a full summer behind him, and he didn't play for Brazil this summer either, so he had the complete summer off. It makes a big difference, I think. I saw they went to, I think, Disneyland in Paris with his family, his wife and his kids. So he seems to be enjoying his life here, and he seems to make good connection in the dressing room. And he's, affirmed that he's going to stay. Because he was one of the Carlo signings too. Like, he was like James, we wouldn't have signed him were it not for the presence of Carlo. Do you know what I mean? And he said, unlike James, distinctly unlike James, that, he's very happy at the club and he wants to stay. I just think that kind of sentiment, I think he gets it. Do you know? Like we said it when he joined, he's the kind of guy who celebrates tackles. Do you know? Like he's literally made for Everton. Like you couldn't get a more Everton player than that. And I think that he gets that. And I think that he's going to love playing in front of a Goodison crowd under the lights, because, like, I know it doesn't scream enthusiasm in terms of the way the game is set up. But it also, what I'm really enjoying this season is just the occasion of games. Like the Leeds game, for instance, I absolutely love that game. Just to, not just the actual game, but everything went around with it, you know, because like in England, the way the fans react to the game when it's in progress is unlike anything else. Like in Spain, they're singing along in the background, that kind of stuff. And it gets almost kind of rhythmic and forgettable almost in many ways. Whereas in England, especially in grounds like Goodison or Anfield or, you know, Highbury back in the day, the crowd are completely plugged into everything that's happening on the pitch. Do you know what I mean? Every single time there's a challenge, the crowd get up. Every time there's a quick chance of a counterattack, the crowd get up. You know, small things like that make a huge difference. And now that for the first time in a long time, we have a nice cold Monday night, get a couple of quick pints in after work, bit of frost in the air, you could say, dark before kickoff. It's savage, like, it's unbelievable.
You're not really selling this, mate, to be honest.
I'm buzzing. It's English football at its best, you know what I mean? That's what we love it, like. That's what we love the Premier League, like, you know? And, like, I think someone like Alan will realise, okay, welcome to the Premier League, as Martin Tyler said, you know what I mean? Like, because you're playing against Burnley, you know, the most quintessentially English team there is, like. It's going to be slightly cold, the crowd will be full, there'll be a bit of tension in the air. It's going to be good, like, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, should be interesting, obviously, Monday as well, but have to enjoy the entire weekend if I want to worry about it until Monday night anyway. But yeah, that's it. We are out of time today. Do we do some predictions before we go, Sarah? What's it going to be on Monday?
Oh, go on. 2-1 Everton.
Toffees. Les, what about you?
2-0 Toffees.
And Alan?
3-1 Everton.
There we go. I'm going to go Scabby 1-0 win. Rondon off the bench. Rondon off the bench to score from a Rodriguez corner.
Yeah.
Love a bit of that. Yeah. Glancing in with his immaculate bonds. Absolutely. But yeah, that's it. That's all we've got time for today. Thanks very much to Sarah, Les, and Alan. Usual stuff over on the Blue Room Extra. If you want to come and join us there, patreon.com/theBlueRoomExtra. And kick about to be out later this week with Rob and Mark as well. So looking forward to listening to that. Well, that's been your weekly show. We'll speak to you again soon.
Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business?
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.